So, Dad, when can I go surfing? By Eric Vasiliauskas. There was a photo on the page, the caption, V.S. Vasiliauskas crouches on a surfboard. Reprinted from Future Reflections Special Issue on Sports, Fitness, and Blindness, Volume 26, Number 2. From the editor, Eric Vasiliauskas is a physician who lives and practices in California. He has served on the board of the National Organization of Parents of Blind Children, and he has frequently contributed articles to Future Reflections. Young children, whether sighted or blind, share an innate curiosity about the world. They constantly ask questions and want to do this or try that. While it is particularly important to create an atmosphere that actively encourages and supports a blind child's desire to explore, sometimes such quests for new experiences can catch you off guard. This is how one such request played out. Several summers ago, I was invited to lecture at a medical conference in Hawaii. My wife, Raza, and our two boys, Veas and Petras, accompanied me. Disney's Hawaii-based cartoon movie, Lilo and Stitch, debuted that very week. I was not particularly surprised when, after listening to the read-along audiobook version of Lilo and Stitch, my ever-inquisitive, soon-to-be first grader asked, "Dad, what exactly is surfing?" As we continued to drive, I did my best to explain. Veas was already very familiar with kickboards. Before the trip, we had already discussed that a boogie board was, in a sense, a bigger version of a kickboard that you lie down on to ride a wave. I further built on these concepts and elaborated that a surfboard was sort of similar to a boogie board, but much longer, and that rather than lying on it, you actually stand up on the board to ride the wave. Since I knew where this line of conversation was likely to lead, I decided to preemptively divert the discussion by enthusiastically reassuring him that we would go boogie boarding later that week, and that the activity would give him a sense of what surfing is. I could tell that this parental diversionary tactic was only partially successful. I'm convinced that is when Veas first started to dream of surfing. A vacation in Hawaii could hardly be considered complete without attending a luau. As part of the pre-dinner festivities, in addition to exhibits featuring hula dancing, Hawaiian instruments, and local arts and crafts, there was one devoted to surfing. Veas had never actually laid his hands, or feet for that matter, on a surfboard. Once the crowd around the exhibit thinned out a bit, we walked over to meet the young local surfer in charge of the display. Veas, in his usual fashion, struck up a conversation and asked a barrage of questions about surfing. As Veas then climbed onto one of the surfboards, I started to make wave sounds and to move the board around in an attempt to simulate the motion of waves, so as to give him a sense of what it might feel like to surf. He was visibly intrigued and excited. My then 5.5-year-old enthusiastically seized this opportunity to ask, "So, Dad, when can I go surfing?" I did what I imagined many parents of a recent kindergarten graduate might do in this situation and decided I would try to punt this one out for a while by rationalizing that as we were near the end of our trip, we would try surfing the next time we go to Hawaii. As a compromise, I proposed that we would not only go boogie boarding the next day, but sea kayaking as well. We, in fact, had a great time the following morning. We rented a 2-person sea kayak. Veas sat in front, wearing his life jacket, and I sat behind him. As we paddled out into the calm bay, we discussed water safety, and I shared some stories from my younger days as a lifeguard. Toward the end of our adventure, a rogue wave sneaked up on us from behind. Fortunately, I noticed it just in time to yell to Veas to brace himself and hold on as tight as he could. As my adrenaline surged, I leaned into my paddle with all my might. The wave lifted us and carried us forward as it proceeded toward the shore. We essentially surfed the wave in our kayak, and to this day I am amazed that we actually managed to remain upright. As we recovered from the excitement, I explained to Veas how we would have handled the situation had we gone for a major tumble. It occurred to me that this was a perfect opportunity for a real-life lesson. Thus, after conferring with Veas, once we reached the shallow water near the beach, we together tipped the kayak over, on purpose. I then showed him how to right the kayak and how to pull himself out of the water and climb back in. Veas got such a kick out of this that upon his request we repeated this maneuver over a number of times. Next, we went boogie boarding. Only adult-sized boards were available for rent, and it soon became evident that Veas was not long enough to kick effectively or really to stabilize the board, nor could he adequately anticipate the bigger waves in this part of the bay. We discovered that if he lay on top of the board and I positioned myself directly over him, I could kick with my fins and make sure we caught the waves. This way we were able to ride bigger waves together. We caught some great waves and had our fair share of spills as well. Veas beamed as he relayed the morning's adventures to his mother and little brother that afternoon. Yet while boogie boarding was lots of fun, Veas knew it was not the same as surfing. Well, as fate would have it, we decided to go on a real 2-week vacation, no work this time, to Kauai the following summer. As soon as the airplane's wheels lifted off the ground, Vea stopped reading the book his mother had brailled for him for the flight. He turned his head toward me, and in a very focused fashion extended his hand to find my face. Gently he guided it in his direction with the clear intent of making sure he had my full attention. I wonder where he learned that maneuver. He then pointedly posed this question, a question that undoubtedly had been brewing ever since we began to plan this trip. "So, Dad, when are we going surfing?" I reassured him that we would look into it once we got to Hawaii. About a week into the trip, Vayas asked again, "So, Dad, which day is my surfing lesson?" I realized at that point that there was no getting around it. That evening I looked through the multitude of brochures and visitors' guides we had accumulated. I saw a promising ad for lessons by a local world-renowned champion surfer. Raza and I both believed that our children should have the same types of experiences as other children. By this time we had met or heard of many remarkable blind individuals and their accomplishments. We had thus already come to understand and fully believe that there is virtually nothing blind people can't do if they put their minds to it. Inspired by blind skier Kara Dunn Yates and her family, I had even taken Vayas skiing with me when he was 3 years old. Yet as I dialed the number listed in the advertisement, I began to imagine what the person answering the phone would think. Not only was I asking for surfing lessons for a 6-year-old, but a blind one to boot. To my pleasant surprise, the woman who answered the phone with a friendly aloha took this all in stride. She called me back within the hour and informed me she had arranged for a private surf lesson. Several mornings later, we woke up very early and drove 45 minutes to Poipu Beach, where at 7 a.m. we met Vayas' surf instructor, Miguel. He had grown up in Hawaii and had started surfing at such a young age that he didn't remember how old he was when his father first put him on a surfboard. Miguel had been on the professional surfing circuit for a number of years. He had a 9-year-old son, whom he had taught to surf at 3 years of age on this very beach. He did not seem even a little bit fazed by the blindness issue. He asked appropriate questions in a tactful way. He wanted to know how strong a swimmer Vayas was, and he was pleased to learn he had been taking formal swimming lessons weekly since he was 3.5 years of age. He asked if Vayas had enough residual vision to distinguish the water, the sand, or the surfboard. Vayas informed him that he could only see light. They first practiced on land for half an hour. Miguel had Vayas explore the entire surfboard. He explained that the front of the surfboard is termed the nose, while the back end is called the tail. Vayas learned that the sides, or the rails, are particularly important, as that is where all the balance is. The deck is the part you ultimately stand on. They went over the dynamics of positioning on the board. Miguel had Vayas lie on the surfboard with his hands holding onto the rails and his toes pointed toward the tail. He then had Vayas start out in paddle position and pretend to catch a wave. Miguel described how, as Vayas first engaged the wave, he would need to put his arms in push-up position and then pop up into surf stance. I must admit that it was refreshing for me to hear an outside person emphasize the importance of body posture and head positioning. Then, like a drill sergeant of sorts, the instructor had Vayas practice by verbally and tactily guiding him through the motions of springing up and assuming the proper surfing stance. They did it over and over and over again until the motions were kinesthetically integrated to the point that they were nearly automatic. Miguel then looked at me and announced that it was time to graduate and move the lesson to the ocean. He chose a spot in the coral reef where the waves rolled in gently. Miguel instructed me to wait in the shallow water by the shore to catch Vayas when he arrived. I watched as they headed out to the water, and I prepared my camera. In the distance, Miguel then guided the surfboard around so that it pointed towards the shore. When the right wave finally came along, Miguel gently pushed the surfboard forward. From there, the wave and Vayas took over. On his very first run, Vayas pushed up, then moved his back foot into position, followed by his lead foot. His legs were appropriately bent, and his head looked forward as he assumed a near-perfect surf stance. I am somewhat embarrassed to admit that I was not fully prepared for what followed. I was, in fact, so mesmerized and blown away that not only did I forget I had a camera, I literally watched Vayas surf right past me. As I cheered him on, I forgot that I was supposed to catch him. I was suddenly shaken from my trance a few seconds later when the nose of his board lodged into a sandbar and Vayas unexpectedly lunged forward off the board. Ouch! I rushed over to him, not quite sure what to expect. Before I could ask him how he was, he exclaimed, "Did you see me, Dad? I want to do that again." You should have seen the joy on his face and the beaming sense of accomplishment that radiated from him after catching his first wave, standing up, and riding the wave all the way to the shore. He was, as we say in California, totally stoked. It was a storybook perfect first run. He surfed for another hour that morning, taking his fair share of spills and wipeouts among the better runs. I, too, was beaming through the rest of the lesson with fatherly pride. I have to admit that it was fun to watch the smiles on the faces of passers-by out for an early morning stroll on the beach. They were amused as they saw this 6.5-year-old kid realize one of his dreams and enthusiastically persist, despite the spills. I kept imagining what they would think if they knew that this determined youngster was blind as well. Talk about a self-confidence-building experience. Vejas's accomplishment commanded an immediate sense of respect from his peers. During parent orientation night a few weeks later, the teacher allotted me 5 minutes to talk about Vejas and blindness as it related to his first grade class. I explained how for Vejas to compete successfully in life, he would ultimately be held to the same standards as his sighted peers. Thus, it was crucial that he learn to be independent and to do things on his own. I had prepared a brief handout for the parents that included child-oriented websites about blindness with pictures, descriptions of some remarkable blind individuals, and activities Vejas enjoyed. It also included suggestions on how parent volunteers and classmates could facilitate our son's socialization and promote his independence in the classroom and during extracurricular activities. The pictures of Vejas's summer activities were by far the most powerful part of the handout. We included these in our parents' portion of his IEP documents as well. In a way that written and verbal description could not quite do justice, the pictures of our blind 6-year-old surfing immediately challenged the established paradigms of the parents, teachers, and other school staff, and even the VI professionals. Preconceived notions of what a blind child is capable of began to melt away. The minds of those who would be interacting with their son were opened, allowing them to see him as a capable, adventurous boy who was eager to take on life's experiences. During that same vacation, Raza and I read The Future Reflections introductory issue paperback for the first time. We read with great interest as blind adults, educators, parents of blind children, and even blind kids themselves shared experiences covering a wide variety of topics pertinent to growing up blind and to raising a blind child. Importantly, each was presented from a positive, uplifting, practical, and success in academics and success in life perspective. How refreshing and comforting it was to find such a concentration of viewpoints that paralleled and supported those we had come to develop. One of the chapters in this introductory issue included the presentations of a panel of 5 blind youths who spoke at an NFB convention on the topic of fun, friends, and fitting in. The young panelists individually and collectively demonstrated that blind kids can do, and in fact do, things that sighted kids do. They highlighted the importance of independence and stressed how actively working to enhance their blindness skills not only facilitated their independence, but also their self-confidence and socialization. During the flight home, I read each child's speech to Vejas. He eagerly listened to every detail. Vejas was very excited by these virtual encounters with each of the young presenters. Like him, each of them was blind, and they shared many of his own interests. The profound impact that Adam, Brian, Jennifer, Noel, and Lauren had on my son soon became evident. He turned to me and excitedly and earnestly exclaimed, "So that's why you want me to be more independent." Indeed, these 5 young Federationists had managed to get across this message and ignite an internal desire to strive for increased independence in our son in a way that his teachers, and we as sighted parents, had not quite been able to do. Next, we read excerpts from an issue of the Braille Monitor about a large number of blind high school graduates and college students who had earned scholarships from the NFB. Even at this young age, Vejas was excited by the range of careers these success-oriented young men and women were choosing to pursue. As I watched, an amazing transformation began to take place in my son before my eyes, a transformation sparked by the stories and ambitions of blind children and blind youth. I truly began to understand the potential power of the National Federation of the Blind. Vejas is now 10 years old and is the proud owner of his very own 7-foot yellow surfboard. He had a second lesson with Miguel a few years later, and he has had several additional formal lessons with other surf instructors since then. Vejas looked like he was having so much fun out there on the waves that he inspired me to take up surfing last year. I once asked Vejas which instructor he thought was the best. "Miguel," he responded without much hesitation. When I asked him why, I was admittedly a little surprised by his insightful response. Vejas said it was because Miguel paid the most attention to detail and had the highest expectations of him. Perhaps some of the biggest limitations the blind face are conceptual biases that most of us have grown up with. Unfortunately, these misconceptions of the capabilities of the blind are relayed either directly or indirectly to our blind children at a very young age by the adults and even children that they interact with. The NFB is devoted to changing what it means to be blind. I submit that accounts of the accomplishments of young Federationists may have the greatest potential to influence changes in perceptions of what it means to be a blind child. Perceptual early intervention, via peer-based stories, has the potential to serve as seeds of inspiration of what is possible to other blind children, their parents, and teachers. I urge more parents, children, teenagers, and young adults to take time to write and share your adventures and experiences to help develop a childhood-focused resource of what is possible. If enough of you do so, perhaps someday these stories may even evolve into a dedicated Kids' Corner in future Reflections or the Braille Monitor.